As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
I'm sorry, you can sit there and look and play with all your silly machines as much as you like.
Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Tame again.
Crank up the music. Charge your glass. This nation is going to dance all night.
Denmark's talismanwoman, Jonathan Pearce's Euro 2022 is well and truly underway. Breaking down every element of William Accio's greatest miss in football history, Mark Bright's 1 millisecond co-commentary that says 1,000 words. A.D. Boothroyd in India, what does it mean to meet across? A 48-pointer in the cricket. Richard Keys on Sue Barker, and a special report from this summer's World Cup you probably hadn't heard of. Brought to your ears by The Athletic, this is Football Clichés. Hello everyone and welcome to episode 174 of Football Clichés. I'm Adam Hurry. Alongside me, first of all, is David Walker. How's it going?
It's going quite well. I've got COVID. Which may or may not have been contracted on the last Thursday after our live show.
Worth it.
But it was a tremendous evening. Absolutely worth it, yeah. I'd do it all again.
Yeah, shame not to have several hundred easily amused people in front of us for this one, but there we are.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But I can visualise them now. That was the great thing about doing the show last week in London. About 400 people turned up and, you know, you do these pods and you just do them, Adam on the Zoom, James on the Zoom, and that's it. But now I can actually visualise the sort of people that listen to this pod and how much they enjoy it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was nice to see what the hell they were getting all amused by for once. For those who turned up, thank you so much. We had a great night. For those who wanted to be there but couldn't, we might have some positive developments for you in the near future. Alongside you for today's adjudication panel is James Moore. How's it going?
Yeah, good, thank you. I'm very much in the wanted to turn up but couldn't camp, but it sounded from the social media noise like it was an incredible evening, so well done.
We had some people asking after you, actually, James. Well, yeah, in the bar afterwards, there were a few, not many, but there were a few James Moore and Nick Miller fans who were inquiring about your presence.
Let's put a number on that. How many people?
About three.
Okay. That is a few people.
Yeah.
It's about 1% of the paying audience. Yeah. Not bad. That's good. That's a good return. Charlie Eccleshare not here. He's being paid to watch Spurs players jog around in Korea and then meet people half-heartedly. What a gig that is, by the way, James.
I mean, it is incredible, isn't it?
Yeah.
Absolute swindle.
Absolutely absurd, the whole pre-season cottage industry. Anyway, I hope Pierre-Emil Højbjerg is enjoying their lunches out there.
No disrespect to Egg.
Right, adjudication panel time. This is from Matt Flywalker, who's been enjoying Euro 2022. And in particular, the BBC's Vicky Sparks, who was waxing lyrical about Chelsea and Denmark's Pernil Harder, who was playing against Germany on Friday night.
Well, she's enjoyed another very good season with Chelsea.
a double with them in England. 16 goals in all competitions. And she is the talisman of this Danish side. Here is Hendrish.
17.2 seconds of reflection there, Dave, and rightly so. Talisman, not a thing. Doesn't exist.
Well, maybe it does now. Is this a thing that has been used before in regularly in women's football commentary? I've never heard it, but you could tell that there was a split second's worth of hesitation in her voice when she said talisman. She went for it.
Say, and I interpreted that as a knowing sort of wink.
Yeah. Right, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But
yeah,
she knew she was breaking the etymological rules of talisman.
But that's why wouldn't it work?
It's not a gendered word.
Is it not?
No, talisman comes from the mid-17th century Arabic tilsum, which is apparently an alteration of the late Greek telesma, completion, religious rite, from telain, complete, perform a rite, from telos, result, end. There's nothing to do with masculinity. There's no manliness in there. It's mun. It's a mun situation, not a man. But yeah, I'm not against it becoming a thing. Language evolves, but just to be pedantic.
I think it has to be delivered with that nod and wink every single time. Then it's acceptable. Otherwise, it's going to sound like a mistake.
I've got no truck with the delivery. The delivery was great. It's just factually incorrect. Right, next up. At Euro 2022. It's not really any sort of major tournament, Dave, until Jonathan Pearce gets involved. Is that fair to say? I feel like that's now the harbinger of a great tournament.
Absolutely, yeah. A staple part of our tournament diet.
Yeah, and it takes him a while to get into gear. In fact, it takes him a while to get into gear in this particular clip. This is from Graham Hall, who noticed Pearcey on duty for Sweden's game against the Netherlands, in which Fridolina Rolfo was having an impressive game for all watching. Jonathan Pearce got rather premature about it all.
He's just winning tournament football, made him off 4 goals. And they won this competition on home soil. They have to defend this free kick now. Rolfo's had a good game for Sweden. We don't have to give the player of the match because UEFA do that very kindly for us these days, but would she be a candidate for you if you had the choice?
Well, I can't go this early in a match. Just past the hour mark. Plenty of drama to be had.
Not the question I asked, actually. I said, would you be a candidate?
22
this early, with 62 got plenty of time to go to the game.
Yes, she is a candidate. But with how open both teams are playing, there's going to be a winner.
That's down on the far side, packed with colour, atmosphere.
Rachel Brown finished there, Dave, sticking up for not only the ethos of the Football Clichés podcast, but for right-minded people everywhere. 62 minutes is not the time to be declaring players of the match.
No. Where do we stand on Jonathan's qualification by saying, well, I'm just asking for a candidate?
Unnecessarily.
Do you have to announce the candidates like the Conservative leadership election? There are now 5 candidates in the running for the player of the match.
I guess they did on Sky, they used to do a poll, didn't they? Did they not used to do like a man of the match, player of the match poll on like live Sky games way back? Like I'm talking about like sort of 20 years ago. I'm fairly sure they did.
It sounds like something that will have happened at some point in football history. You know, the same way, you know, like letting fans decide at the match and all that stuff. Yeah. But yeah, Rachel Brown finished is quite right. Just wait, Jonathan.
Almost Loro-esque, actually, her intervention.
Yeah.
Wasn't it? It really was. Incredibly staunch. And yeah, I would back that as well. An hour into a game, first game of the tournament for those two sides as well. You've got to let it linger a bit longer than that.
And it was on. What was the score? Was it 1-1? Yeah, it was 1-1. Yeah. It's not like she scored a hat trick or anything at that point.
Yeah,
but Jonathan Pearce very much getting up to speed in his own inimitable way at Euro 2022. Next up, curious, very curious scenes. I don't really know how to tackle this one at all from the Canadian Premier League. Valor FC against Halifax Wanderers on Sunday. And I think we've all seen it now. Let's enjoy the commentary at least. The aghast, disbelieving Canadian commentary as William Accio produces the worst miss of all time, I think. The worst miss of all time.
Tracks it down, opens up to his right boot. Across towards Ricci. Second effort, it dribbles in. No! Did Accio clear that off the line himself? What in the world? Ricci had that going. Accio was trying to make sure it got over the goal line, and in the end, has a goal line stand. I don't think I've ever seen that before. That is clearly going in. Willie gets there, and yes, he keeps it out himself.
Right. So, now it's easy to kind of overreact to these situations, James. It would be easy, and I did indeed fall into this trap to some extent, to call it the worst miss of all time without really kind of weighing up the criteria and the competition for this. But I feel on solid ground. Let's take into account the various criteria that we need to use for bad misses of all time. First of all, the range. Now, it is considered a heinous crime to miss from a yard out, 2 yards out. That's the sort of range where someone would speculate that their grandmother could have scored. So range is important. That's fair to say, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd say so. And then, I mean, this was, this was goal line technology range, wasn't it? The ball was so far over the line that it actually probably was one they maybe had a second look at. It was incredibly far over the line, just a fraction of the ball on the goal line.
So on that criteria alone, Dave, it absolutely nails it. It is essentially in already, which I think is part of the magic of this miss, is the fact that the ball was essentially in anyway.
Yeah.
Which I think is wonderful.
For anyone who hasn't seen the clip, search it out. But just to describe it, yeah. So the ball has been sort of just nipped beyond the keeper, and maybe he gets a touch on it, I think, or something. And so it's rolling relatively slowly towards an empty goal. And there are no covering defenders. There's no challenge. There's just two attacking players. And Accio basically clears it off the line as when it was basically three quarters of the way over the line already. But I've spotted something just now in his body language afterwards, which I wonder whether that may be his defence if he's spoken about it already. He sort of points back to the line and the ball as if to suggest that it was already over. So did he like think, oh, and you know, did he sort of hesitate and kind of just fuck it up at the last minute, sort of think, oh, I need to get this over the line, but oh no, it's over, oh shit.
That's an interesting reading. So are you suggesting that he was racing in with the intention of sort of booting it in celebration and then sort of mid-act realised that the ball may well not actually be in by the time his boot contacted it, and that got him into a right old palaver?
I think so. I think that would be the generous way of looking at it, that he somehow just had a panic and tried to do three things at once and just ended up doing that.
Okay.
The thing I've seen suggested is that he was going to absolutely larrup it into the back of the net, and then his teammate is there in the back of the net. If he was worried about clobbering this bloke in the face with the ball, so sort of changed his body shape a little bit and then just completely skewed it in the other direction. But
well, I mean, obviously in these situations, their inner motivation is the hardest thing to decipher, of course. We'll get onto that in a second. But so we've established that the range could not have been closer. The ball was essentially over the line. You couldn't get closer.
It's an amazing clearance.
So, exactly. That's a great way of putting it. So that's sealed already. Then you have to take into account the fact that there was no challenge to be overcome. The ball wasn't bobbling. Like a lot of people suggesting that Choupo-Moting's miss for PSG should be up there in the consideration, and it is shocking, but it's a kind of honest miscontrol of the ball, almost like if it happened in the middle of the pitch it would be completely conceivable. So I'm kind of willing to discount that. It was just a misjudgment. This is all very deliberate. He's run in, he's booted the ball off the line, and he's probably miskicked it, but he has booted the ball off the line. So it was the most unnecessary act from the closest possible range, and he kicks it away from the goal. It goes out for a throw-in. Everybody around him cannot understand what's going on. I think I can't think of a single criterion which it doesn't beat every other miss, Dave.
If we're taking it at face value, it has to be, absolutely has to be, the worst miss of all time. It is the epitome of it was easier to score than miss.
Yeah, yeah.
You didn't need to touch it. You didn't need to do anything. It was like Uber David Nugent moment against for England when he nicked that goal off Jermaine Defoe. Like, exactly. It was a disgraceful thing to do, to even try and nick it
That's
over the line.
That's a very good point. Yes.
I would love to know what his reaction to his teammate would have been if he even scored. The whole thing is absolutely shocking. But, James, we mentioned a second ago about why he did this and whether we'll ever know. Well, as it turns out, if you go to his Wikipedia page, under his personal life section, it says Accio runs a YouTube channel about his experiences as a professional international soccer player. The channel has over 30,000 subscribers. Mate!
Have you looked? Have
what
you
a
looked,
platform!
Have you looked at the channel now since then
yeah,
to see how
nothing
many
there.
It's not gone up? Nope. I suppose the one other thing you could say about that was that because, with respect, he's not an elite player or playing in an elite team, it doesn't quite have that sort of disparity between like the level of football you'd expect and what you're actually seeing. You mentioned that Choupo Moting one, playing in a, you know, in a massive, it was a Champions League match, right? And, you know, with all these amazing players on the pitch, it kind of feels like more in congruous with that setting. Whereas this, again, with respect, maybe not quite the same.
Interesting that you're applying the same kind of debate that you would for a great goal. Is that, well, yeah. he didn't do it at the highest level. But if there was a Puskas Award for own goals, it wouldn't take that into account. You know, the electricity of own goals here.
That is a very good point.
Do we know anything about the team dynamics for this particular team from the Canadian Premier League? What team is it that he plays for? Don't even know.
FC.
Yeah. Is there a race for the Golden Boot? Is there a bit of infighting? But even then, if it was him in the race, he'd just nod it over the line. Like, it's not... Or maybe maybe he's not in the race, but he just really hates the person who is in the race, so he's just preventing him from scoring.
Surely someone spoke to him after the game.
They must have done. Unless he was protected by the club press officer.
Yeah, but now, sadly, I mean, all you do, if you Google his name, you're just surrounded by just viral articles about this bloke that Mr. Goal in the Canadian...
Well, if he's got his own YouTube channel, surely he will be addressing
it. Yeah, exactly. Soon. He has a platform.
Yeah.
Cannot wait to find out.
I mean, that would be the most depressing thing, wouldn't it?
It's going to be a really bleak video.
Turns out it's all just for the content.
Oh, man.
That would explain Ben Foster's goalkeeping record over
just
the last...
The YouTube... Exactly. It's the YouTube thumbnail of him head in hands.
Yeah, poor William Accio. This one could potentially run and run. Speaking of which, we thought this saga was over, James. Mike Riley, of course, no longer the referees chief at PGMOL. And that's good news for one man, Richard Keys. I presume he is supportive of Howard Webb, as Riley's successor. But we thought that saga was over. It might not be. Because do you know who the new commissioner of the Metropolitan Police is?
Hit me.
Mark Rowley. Right, back to more regular matters, please, Dave. This is from Jack Kelly, who was enjoying the highlights of Crystal Palace's 5-4 training ground friendly win over Millwall on Saturday. They gave it the full treatment, commentator and co-commentator, in this case Mark Bright. And this game was characterised by some very lax early July defending, about which Brighty was getting steadily more annoyed. But I think this reaction to another soft goal from a Millwall set piece was my favourite bit. You have to listen very, very carefully for this one.
Another set piece for Millwall towards the far post again, and they have got a head to it, and they have got a third goal, and it's another one from a set piece. And suddenly, it's game on all over again.
Do you hear it?
Or was it the tut?
Yeah, yeah.
So every time I listened to that, I thought it was on YouTube.
Just a tut.
An audible
just a tut. A really good tut as well.
Yeah.
Really good tut.
I think,
but that's it.
I think that tut probably coupled with like a head... movement of the head, yeah. Side.
Yeah, ostentatious shaking of the head, yeah.
Yeah.
I guess that's all you really need from an in-house club commentator.
Yeah. Pre-season. It's a warm-up for the commentators as well. Let's not forget that.
It's quite hard to tut over the roar of, say, a crowd at Anfield and Super Sunday. but I would be all for it.
Yeah. Pre-season tutting. People just not up to speed.
Gary Neville must have tutted at Anfield at some point.
Yeah, I'm sure he has.
He must have done.
Yeah. But yeah, really enjoyed that. Also enjoy the cast of characters that populate the Indian Super League whenever you go and have a glance over. Owen Coyle's time at Jamshedpur is over, of course, famously. He led the Men of Steel to the regular season title in the Indian Super League. The Men of Steel. They're owned by Tata Steel.
Right.
Hence the name. But who do you get to replace Owen Coyle? How do you follow that man who's taken you to the regular season title? You do that, Dave Walker, by hiring AD Boothroyd.
Of course. Oh, AD. It's like really easy to write it all off as a knacker's yard, isn't it? But for him, it's probably brilliant. Like go and work in India for a few months, probably live in a really nice place, get some decent money. They're one of the best teams. Why not?
There's so many angles to attack here, James, but First of all, the Twitter graphic that accompanied his unveiling, the wait is finally over. AD Boothroyd joins Jamshedpur FC as our new head coach. Drop a heart to welcome our new gaffer in the Jamshedpur style. And of course, he gets his own little montage of his face just scattered around an image.
I mean, that's more enthusiastic than Man City probably were about Haaland, I think, when they announced him belatedly.
Yeah, but it's all go in the Indian Super League, James, because as AD Boothroyd is installed at Jamshedpur, over at Bengaluru FC, they've appointed Simon Grayson.
I mean, they feel like they're in a sort of similar vein. Those two, they're definitely feel like they're in the same sphere of managers.
Why do the Indian Super League love this type of manager so much?
Because availability,
very specific level of English football management.
Absolutely, they're all in the same bracket. Peter Reid has been out there. John Gregory had a lot of success out there. Has Pulis been over? No, I don't think Pulis has.
Surely it's just the availability. The guys who have managed in the Premier League, so they're known, and they're out of work, so they'll be willing to go over there. And
I mean, being England under 21 manager has some cachet, clearly. I mean, this isn't a complete nobody. He's been fancied for certain jobs, but he still very much ticks these boxes.
I've got a list here of all the coaches to have been in the Indian Super League. Teddy Sheringham had a spell out there for 80K.
As manager?
Yes, as head coach, yes. Yeah, head coach, yeah. Robbie Keane, also for the same. Steve Coppell. Simon Grayson, currently there. John Gregory, as we said. Robbie Fowler had a spell at East Bengal.
I do remember this.
Phil Brown. Hyderabad.
100%.
Perfect.
David James had a brief, a 3-month spell in Kerala Blasters. Peter Taylor. Steve Coppell's managed loads of them. Managed about 3 different clubs.
This is incredible.
It feels like there are 2 distinct groups here, aren't there? There are kind of 90s Premier League stars who haven't been able to become managers in English football who have gone off to try somewhere else. And then there are these guys who are probably managers in the 90s who haven't been able to find work more recently, who have opted to go to India to... feels like that's the 2 very distinct groups. There's no kind of managers really on an upward trajectory there, I don't think.
Yeah, I get that. But like thematically, it's such a tightly knit group. So much so that if I had to kind of encapsulate it in one image, I could imagine them all sat around in the same restaurant, but wearing the... every single possible colour of polo shirt.
Yeah. And
every single possible colour.
This next name will fit very much into that. David Platt, who had a spell at Pune City in 2015. Phil Brown was also there. You've got, Peter Reid. Nicholas Anelka had a spell at Mumbai City. It's incredible, really.
Manager.
And the current manager of Mumbai City is an Englishman called Des Buckingham, who is a 37.
He sounds like he should be 74. He's not. He's 37. He's amazing.
I thought it was.
Is he some descendant of? Is it Vic Buckingham, the guy who managed like Ajax?
Oh, it might.
Maybe he's like a descendant, and that's how he's got the job.
He's clearly got some coaching pedigree. He's done the rounds. As a coach,
he's been over a lot.
So he's picking up some skills.
I think he's done his. Yeah, he's had a lot of jobs in Australia and New Zealand. Yeah.
They're all in the bar in their polo shirts. He's back in the hotel room on his laptop, making sure that he's got his drill sorted out for
White
the next
scout.
Day. Exactly. They're all laughing at him, aren't they? Des there, and he's got his tactics book out again, has he? Yeah. Anyway, that's enough. Next up, Paul has alerted me to some pre-season behaviour over at Sunderland. The Roka Report website described this goal from Luke O'Nien thus. Pritchard's corner is met by Luke O'Nien at the back post, who put Sunderland ahead. This was against Rangers in their pre-season friendly. Paul says, in fact, this was a cross chested down and converted, Dave. I don't think you can meet it unless it's a first time finish. He's bang on, isn't he?
Yes, because the meeting, it's like when you say, when you're having a go at defender for missing a header from a long goal kick. Mm. Meet it. Meet the bounce.
Yeah, it sort of implies an element of like timing, doesn't it? You need to be in the right place at the right time. You need to move to be in the right place at the right time.
Maybe sort of. So if meet in an attacking context, James, if meeting is like a first time contact, so header, volley, whatever, side foot finish, whatever you like, it's meeting it, it's first time and you're done. If you control it, it should be known as welcoming. Welcome the cross. It's perfect.
No, that feels to me like it would work for a goalkeeper collecting a cross, but it doesn't work. Maybe defensively that works, but I don't think in an attacking sense. It doesn't feel
More, it's more secure in a keeper's gloves. Is that what you're
saying?
Yeah,
that feels like it's been it has been like embraced,
okay,
brought inside. Whereas like if a centre forward is just going to like welly it as hard as I can towards the goal, right?
Could you describe it thus: Lelukainen met the ball at the back post and then finished past the keeper?
No way!
Because the meeting is the chest part of this situation.
No way. If you control it, it's no longer a meeting. No chance. Absolutely militant about this. Meeting is first time only. Come on.
Yeah, but you're moving on. That's what I'm saying. He's met it, and then you're moving on. You're doing something else.
No way. Wow. Glad we included this, because that's really let me know who's who in the landscape of football cliches. Next up, I wonder if you'll disagree about this one. David G98 has pointed me in the direction of FC Edinburgh, who said they are extremely excited to announce the signing of former Premiership defender and Scottish Cup winner Liam Fontaine. This signing is a statement of intent, they say, that the club plans to compete in Cinch League One. James, shouldn't be allowed to declare your own statement of intent. We've talked about statements of intent recently on this podcast, but we didn't address this particular issue. You can't declare your own.
Yeah, I mean, in a club, like, effectively press release, that is actually a statement. It is literally a statement from the club. Yeah, you can't have a statement within a statement.
Yeah, statements of intent are such a fluid concept, Dave, but I think we can all agree that it's for others to decide in the landscape of football at this moment whether your signing is the statement of intent that you think it is.
I think you can be like a manager could be asked whether this was a statement of intent and could confirm it or could agree with it with a question. You can't in official club communications declare something a statement of intent because it's just waiting to blow up in your face.
Yeah, exactly. Who are you to say that, FC Edinburgh? Right, over to the County Cricket Championship once again. James, Kent welcome Northamptonshire to the Spitfire Ground St Lawrence for the 170th Canterbury Cricket Week in the LV Insurance County Championship from Monday the 11th of July. Now, Northamptonshire have said, in what is being dubbed as a 48-pointer, both sides will be looking to record a victory to boost their points tally in Division 1 of this year's championship. What the fuck?
48 points.
James Morgan asks, can we really allow the usage of 48-pointer in a cricketing context?
I mean, you're taking me slightly out of my comfort zone here. So I understand there are like an absolute shedload of points they can play for in a county championship, and is it 24 they can get?
I sought some expert opinion from Jack Pitbrook, and he says it's 16 points for a win, Dave.
Yeah.
And you can get 8 possible bonus points for various things that you achieve with the bat.
Right. I'm fascinated by this, and it's the same in other sports, same in Formula One, where the points have changed quite a lot over the years. I remember it used to be like 10 points for a win, but now it's 25 points for a win, is it, I think? And, like, why 16 points for a win plus 8? Why does it
it's
need
like
to be that many points? Yeah, exactly. Why
it is mad.
Can't there be a universal system of how points in league tables should work? I don't get it. I don't get what the point of it is.
It must be to accommodate the bonus structure. It can only be, like, otherwise you'd be into sort of half points because those things mean less, I can only assume. But what a mess that sounds.
Yeah, because you can't halve 3, obviously. Yeah. And you don't want half points and all that shit. But like, it still seems really arbitrary. And it feels to me like somebody's like, oh, it'll look better if there's like, you know, a team with up 195 points at the end of the season.
They've broken the 100-point barrier again.
Well, they do that, but they score loads of points every single time they play anyway. They don't need it in the league table too. They're racking up massive scores all the time.
It's incredible.
How many points are there between, sorry, was it Kent and Northamptonshire?
Kent and Northamptonshire. Northamptonshire have a game in hand, but they are 3 points behind Kent. I don't know if that makes it better or worse that they put it at 48
points.
Three
points of a game in hand in this context, this means absolutely nothing now, doesn't it?
Well, Gloucestershire are 10th in the table. They've got 53 points, but they haven't won a game.
Whipping boys of Division 1 of the County Championship. Anyway, but 48-pointer, it's absurd, no matter what the technicals behind it. Not having it. Let's move on to something that I think we can enjoy and not sneer at. This is from Mike Emotions. He tells me this is his DJ name. I'm watching the All-Ireland semi-final between Kerry and Dublin in Gaelic football, and Sean O'Shea is just about to step up for a penalty. So just to be clear, in Gaelic football, if you get fouled, it's like a football penalty. Like, you put the ball down on the spot and you take it like a penalty into the goal. And here's what the commentators had to say about it.
But before all of that, there's a penalty coming up. And Sean O'Shea, who's already scored after 4 minutes, which was his fourth ever championship goal, has a chance to put a big, big gap between the teams before we reach half time.
He's a bottom right-hand corner merchant. Let's see, does he change his mind?
Thankfully, Evan Cummins is okay and able to face up to the kick.
That may not surprise us, I think.
No.
Big moment.
Down at the goal where we had those penalty shootouts in the Galway Armagh quarter-final. In the semi-final of the All-Ireland. Sean O'Shea, big moment. Does he score? He saved it! It saved even the second time!
Wanted to include the actual end result of this palaver because it turns out he did actually go for the bottom right-hand corner, James. The bottom right-hand corner merchants.
I mean, that
failed to produce the goods.
That is incredible, right? We definitely need to take that for football.
You happy with that to enter the merchant subcategory?
I think so. I mean, if you know exactly the kind of penalty that is, and you know exactly the kind of player who takes that kind of penalty, don't
Harry
you?
Kane.
Harry Kane. Very much really? Just like drilled into the bottom corner. Like Harry pulling
Kane's
it across himself.
Harry Kane's a top left corner merchant, if anything, isn't he?
I reckon bottom left.
We can't have this, though. No, James, you're wrong here. We can't have someone being called a top corner merchant or a bottom corner merchant or
what
a straight down the middle
what merchants
merchant.
What are permitted? Yeah. What merchants are permitted?
Panenka merchants. None of it works.
Give me a list of approved merchants.
You'll often hear someone described as a penalty merchant, like a sort of Bruno Fernandes or whoever.
Really?
So why not be more specific? Yeah, someone who just scores penalties and didn't really score any proper goals.
Speed merchant.
You hear penalty tapping merchant. Do you hear that? Penalty. Tapping I feel like merchant. Tapping, maybe it's tapping merchant.
Yeah, speed merchants are the biggest merchants.
Yeah, speed merchants.
Tapping
yes.
merchants, obviously more of a snidey thing to say, but I think it exists.
Speed merchant? Speed demon?
Yeah.
Not speed merchant.
Speed merchant, very much a thing.
Is merchant like sort of a backhanded compliment thing? Sometimes used in a bit of a derogatory sense.
It increasingly is, hence sort of tap-in merchant. I'm just gonna look for its usage amongst people I follow on.
Just to loop back on something we were talking about earlier, I found a story from 2019 where Ben Foster calls Mo Salah a penalty merchant, so...
Okay. Wind-up merchant.
Wind-up merchant. Yeah, exactly. Wind-up merchant is the top answer here
in family
fortunes.
Yeah. And that's a very, very solid format to use for this.
That is true.
I've seen red card merchant. Speed merchant is good. So speed and wind-up. Someone once tweeted me that Hatem Ben Arfa would be in a Streets Don't Forget 11 rather than some of the boring longevity merchants that featured in the Barclays 11. Longevity merchants. Absolutely fantastic.
I think the key thing is, though, it's like detrimental, isn't it? It has to be a negative thing. It has to be like pejorative. And I think if you're describing someone as a bottom corner merchant, you're kind of saying they competently take penalties, which if they're not taking them for your team is boring and bad.
Okay, so you can be a merchant if you consistently do something either neutral or good. You can be a merchant if you rely on something that people can perceive as being either sort of cheating or bad. What about this? Someone described a manager as a long ball merchant.
That's fine. A whole
team could be long ball merchants, plural.
Yes.
That's good.
Yeah. I think that's number two. If Les Dennis was here, that would be number two on the...
Yeah, AD Boothroyd is going to transform Jamshed Poor into a team of long ball merchants.
This tweet from Michael Cox saying he was quote tweeting an account asking for the favourite athletics moment of the Olympics in Tokyo, and he said a commentator describing someone in a sprint event as a speed merchant, which had me absolutely seething for 5 seconds before I realised it was part of the decathlon and therefore was acceptable. He gets it. He fucking gets it. Ah, oh, brilliant. Brilliant, the whole thing. But yeah, great analysis of the merchant subgenre, but still not having bottom right-hand corner merchant. Not for me. Dave, one for you this. This is from Matt Viney, who sent us some wrestling from the US.
Scorpio Sky looking to retain that title here tonight, our opening contest.
Well, you hear a massive audience here in Rochester, New York, screaming Wardlow's name. The 12th man is in Wardlow's corner, in the challenger's corner, but I don't know if that's going to matter much.
Come on, then, defend it.
I can't defend it. That, I believe, is the commentator in question there is known as Taz. And he's got it all wrong there. The 12th man. But what would you say? The second man? It was a singles bout, so...
But the 12th man isn't a thing in wrestling, not like officially or anything.
But
hang on,
what about like in the Royal Rumble or something? When there's the best 10, 11 guys in the ring with tables and stuff?
It's not... Well, it isn't a thing, no. It's not an accepted thing. I've certainly never heard it used before in wrestling. But it doesn't work on any level at all, really.
Agreed.
I heard on a very similar note, I heard the England women manager Serena Wiegmann described the Old Trafford crowd last week as the 12th woman, which I'd never thought of before. But I was at the game and I was sort of, so was I part of the 12th women? Was I?
Yeah.
I was, yeah, well, I was, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, there's an ongoing campaign of that very name. Yeah. I think it's fine.
You're giving the team something extra on the pitch, aren't you?
Part of the collective spirit, yeah.
And the fact that the crowd at a game like that would be more female than it would be at an England men's game. If only it adds to the, but isn't absolutely crucial, but it does add to the kind of direct like-for-like replacementness of the phrase. So I'm all for it. No issue there, certainly. But yeah, wrestling, another nail in that coffin. Right, Keys and Grey Corner. Sunday. Now, just a quick one for you. Tributes flooding in for the retiring Sue Barker, who made a tearful goodbye to Wimbledon duties on the BBC at the weekend. Yeah, lots of love for Barker from all the usual places. Lineker tweeting his fond farewell. All by the book. All absolutely by the textbook. Absolutely fine. And here's Keezy's tribute, which could not be more Keezy from start to finish. Here it goes. Healy and I told you you'd be good. Hashtag Sue Barker. You were better than good, as it turned out. Much better. Legend is the word. I'm proud to have done the first two with you. Do you remember his wind machine to make your hair move? Crying laughing emoji. Enjoy the time off now.
God's sake.
Every element of this, Dave. First of all, I knew you were good before you did.
Yep.
Legend is the word. I'm proud to have done the first two with you. First two what?
Wimbledon's.
Wimbledon?
1877.
Keezy, Wimbledon.
Surely that's not what he means. But that can only be it.
Yeah.
Maybe. Must be. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, but presumably, she didn't go straight from being like a player to hosting the whole thing on the BBC. She must have done some sort of outside broadcasty bits, right? At the start. Maybe, that's I don't know.
But yeah, I reckon I can see that Keezy might have been at Wimbledon back in the sort of, when he was still on GMTV or whatever it was called back then, but also doing it, you know, very much in the Andrew Castle sort of mould of things. Yeah,
he must have had, you know, he transitioned from sort of light entertainment to sport.
Yeah.
So that kind of Wimbledon feels sort of halfway between the two. He's kind of done his inverted partridge thing. As a point, well, that could have worked.
I can imagine Keezy playing tennis with Cliff Richard.
Ah, yes.
I can see 100%. That. I can see Keezy donning the whites and having a game of doubles.
Andy Gray at the net.
Oh!
You'd be a really good line manager. Excellent, well done. But yeah, look forward to Sue Barker popping up on Be In Sports next season. Sue Barker.
This episode is supported by season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. you can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Oh, look at that! That is wonderful!
Brought to your ears by The Athletic. This is Football Clichés.
Okay, that wraps up the adjudication panel. But we're not done here. I want to talk to you about the trip I made a couple of weeks ago in search, because there was no World Cup this summer, but I wanted to find one. And I went to Nantes, the birthplace of surrealism, for the Foosball World Cup.
Wow. I mean, obviously, I knew you were going. So, but before that, I didn't realise that there was a Foosball World Cup. Explain.
The 14th edition of the Foosball World Cup, or to give it its proper name, the International Table Soccer Federation World Cup and World Championships. In its hometown of Nantes, that's where the headquarters of the ITSF are based.
Okay, so, wow. So what's the, a lot of questions, actually, but what's the format? Is it teams? Doubles?
It's 10 categories, and there's 39 individual championships at the Foosball World Cup. You've got the men's singles, the women's singles. You've got the men's doubles, the women's doubles, the mixed doubles, the senior men's doubles, the junior versions of all of those, and that's under 13s, under 16s, under 19s.
Wow.
Then you've got... then they have something called Classic, which is essentially the same rules minus one rule, which was... There's a certain type of shot you're not allowed to do. That was all a bit strange. I kind of ignored the classic. Sorry to all the classic fans out there. And then the whole thing, all these finals reach the climax of the Nations World Cup. So it's a bit like the Davis Cup. All the teams get together and they play each other in a kind of combination of all the formats. So it's two singles and two doubles. And it's like first to 40. And it's fucking amazing. Foosball. Foosball, James, what your image, what's your kind of experience of foosball as a game?
It's funny to mention that because I have actually beaten, I think maybe a first division winner. Yeah, Chris Kamara. I've beaten Chris Kamara at table football.
Right. I mean, where and when?
At a sort of shonky PR event for, I think, a mobile phone manufacturer in the late...
Fantastic.
In the late 2000s. And it being a PR event in the late 2000s, there were paid free goals there as well, I think.
Right. No such scenes.
No.
In Nantes. But so yeah, so there are 1,000 players. There are 1,000 players at this venue for 6 days playing foosball non-stop.
So how many matches were there in total, do you think? Hundreds. Hundreds of matches. Did they do the national anthem before every one?
Great question.
They did play the national anthems, I was delighted to discover. Because this is the thing. I went to Nantes with one kind of inevitable question, which is foosball a sport? This is the sort of question these pieces always have to answer. And I answered it in my 6,400-word piece for The Athletic that's out this morning. But I felt like it was a question I had to tackle first. Just how much of a legit sport is this? And it was ticking boxes left, right and centre. Do they play the national anthems? Yes. They had a whole ceremony about halfway through the tournament where they introduced the teams that were going to be playing. Well, no, they introduced the entire squads, whether they were going to be playing in the Nations event or not. And they all played the national anthem. And all the countries you'd expect to nail the national anthem did. GB, 6 out of 10. US, 7 out of 10. Italy, 9 out of 10.
Wow. Yeah.
Absolutely nailed it. And then what other boxes did they tick? The organisation is just amazing. They had commentators, they were broadcasting on Twitch with three different commentators.
I was going to ask you about that, actually, the broadcasting. So what were their post-match interviews, or did you see any commentators, or how did that work?
So they had a really cheerful Czech guy called Radek, whose job it was to kind of be the compere on the stage for the whole thing. A little bit like darts, I guess.
Right.
It's quite dartsy, but without the nicknames and the beer and the placards. It's very sanitised.
Right. Is that any of the bits that people like about darts?
Yeah, sure. But this is a family thing. It's very family oriented.
Yeah, okay.
Is there Sweet Caroline?
No, the only music I heard was kind of some sub Super Sunday sort of music that they would play over the top of the league table or the upcoming fixtures, played on sort of a 10-second loop. as players took to the stage and left the stage at the end.
As a spectator sport, though, presumably it's not that thrilling. You have to watch the big screens, I guess, right?
I think this is one of the big weaknesses of foosball. It's very hard to watch. So unless you're sort of crowded around a table, and there are kind of two ways to consume it. Either you stand around a table in the arena, and the spectators are allowed to walk around.
Oh, okay.
And the crowds were a little bit...
Like a casino.
Very much like a casino. Or the impression I got every single time there was a big match, so like a French player playing, or a US, or Germany against anyone. Everybody enjoyed watching people playing against Germany. And the crowds is a little bit like on Antiques Roadshow, when someone's got something fucking amazing. Like, really cool. And then there's people in the background sort of just... arching to get their head on camera. That was basically the size of the crowds around some of these tables. Absolutely gripped. And it is gripping if you can see it happening. But if you're watching it from afar, you've got no chance. So they had it on big screens with replays, slow motion replays after goals. I tell you what, the biggest credential it had, for the first time ever, they had anti-doping controls.
Oh, what?
This year, the ITSF have signed up to the WADA code.
What sort of stuff would you have to... How could you dope in foosball? Something to steady your hand? Or I suppose just general stamina, attention span?
Well, the boring answer is there's kind of two approaches to this. One, there's kind of... You want to clean up your sport and make sure that everyone's, you know, legit. And it's a thing that families can get involved in. So that's the boring side. Although something like the world number two makes his living growing legal weed in Colorado. So I don't know how he's going to... adhere to the rules. Otherwise, in theory, you know, you could take beta blockers or amphetamines just to get you going. I don't know. I mean, it's a power-based sport. There's a lot of speed involved, a lot of wrist action. And I was on the hunt, James, partly in this tournament, for the bad boy of foosball. I couldn't find them. People kept telling me about this French guy called Olivier Covos, who had a history of, like, absolutely going crazy at opponents to put them off their game, shouting at referees, upturning the odd table here and there.
Wow. But they're heavy, those tables, by the way.
And they are, and they're worth a lot of money as well. And but he went out in the early rounds, so no danger there.
I mean, it sounds like there must have been some quite eccentric, let's say diplomatically, people that what am I right in thinking there are a few curious characters?
Yeah, inevitably, because it's actually quite an intense sport. Like, it's like there are very few sports where you're at that close quarters with your opponent. Like, you're over a table, you know, going at it, so to speak. I was milling around between tables in these sort of qualifying rounds of various events, and there was a good hubbub going, lots of intermittent cheering, and then in the massive overspill arena, it was like a greenhouse, there was the heat coming in as they were sort of trying to get through the elimination rounds. Over the hubbub, I heard this. You said my feet were slow, my hands aren't. So I turned round and I saw this giant woman called Tracy Brubaker of Team USA. And she was playing the world number one in the women's singles, Kati Sabalescu from Bucharest. And she beat her. Tracy Brubaker is 52 years old, mother from Colorado. And she's the nicest person, one of the nicest people I've ever met. But as soon as she steps up to the table, she is, as her partner Amy Powers described her, a beast.
It's always great to play. Just clean and fierce.
Fierce is the interesting word. Amy, this woman, she is a force of nature.
She's a beast. On the table. How'd you feel?
Well, this is the thing. So as soon as that word ready is said, do you just switch?
Yes. At competition. Because in our basement at home, I'm not like this. And they say, Mom, why don't you practice like you play? And I said, because I'm busy thinking about what I'm going to make for dinner, or what laundry I need to do, or who needs what.
Are you telling me this is an escape from all of that?
Oh, yes.
Yeah?
Oh, it's absolutely a hobby. If it paid millions, it'd be a great profession. And I'd definitely have somebody else do the laundry.
Given your beastly nature on the table...
This is how Jesus made me.
Tracy. Have you ever had any sort of run-ins with some opponents? How argumentative do you get?
Oh, I don't like to get argumentative at all, but I don't like to get pushed around. Mm. And if I'm sure about something, then we're going to have to discuss it. But I've been instructed to stop caving in so easily in the name of peace. that's hard for me because I'm a lover.
Yep.
And a mom.
Yep.
So it's hard, but no, if something, and a fighter, not in that way though. And if something's, somebody's trying to do something that's not right, I have to stand up.
Too right.
It feels like it would be remiss not to ask about spinning. What is it allowed? Is
it's really, a very elementary question.
Is it a cardinal sin, like people kind of make out that it is?
It's the first question that everybody seems to ask. And that now I'm on the scene. And I'm quite big on the scene now, on the foosball scene. I feel like I can field these sorts of questions. Spinning is indeed prohibited in foosball. And spinning is defined as rotating the rods 360 degrees either before or after hitting the ball. So in around 1992, someone popularised a new shot that got round this rule. And it changed the game completely. It's essentially like the back pass rule in football. Completely changed the sport. And it was called the snake shot. And what it is, if you're thinking about gripping a foosball handle, you're gripping it with your palm. And you're twisting it with your wrist. This guy, his name's Terry Moore, but he didn't invent it apparently, but he did popularise it. He brought it to the Tornado Championships in the US, which is their equivalent of the World Cup. That's their rival tournament. And what it is, you put your hand down past the handle, past the rod, and you're holding the rod against your wrist. And with the snake shot, you pull your arm up and you rotate the rod with your wrist as you pull it up. And what it does is, you've pinned the ball underneath your man, facing the goal. So the man, that's the technical term, the man's feet are facing the goal with the ball pinned underneath his feet. And you rapidly whip that rod and the man spins all the way around backwards, hits the ball less than 360 degrees, maximum power. And that changed the game. So from then on, the snake shot became the deciding shot in about what they think is about 70% of matches at elite level. That's what decides it.
I think by the time that the 36 Olympics roll around, and this podcast has long since bitten the dust, God knows what state the Athletic will be in by that point. I could see the BBC bringing you in as foosball debuts at the 2036 Olympics. Adam Hurry is here just to provide us with a little bit of colour.
Yeah, definitely. I could totally co-commentate in foosball now, 100%. I've got it. I've got it all in my locker. It's all up there. I absorbed it 48 hours relentlessly.
So did you get to have a go on any of the tables? Did you take anyone on at all? Or were the members of the press pack having their own tournament?
Well, given the community spirit of it, it was really open. As I said, the fans could just sort of mill around. So if there was a table free, you could just play on it.
What? Tournament regulation? You just hop on and play?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
We're That's outrageous.
3,000
so just pop on
tables.
Pop onto the American R on an off day and have a five
yeah,
have
exactly.
a kick about.
That's the great thing about foosball. Everyone's welcome. So, do you know what? I was sat watching Dave Zeman versus
shut up.
His laugh.
Dave Zeman is a legend of British
David
football.
David Zeman.
He's won title after title after title. And he won the over 60
classic wrists.
Double. Wasn't quite as cheerful as Dave Zeman, I have to say, but he had a dry wit about him, let's put it that way. So I was sitting watching this, thoroughly enjoying it on the big screen. They were playing on one of the show stages. And this bloke leans across and says, "Have you had a go? Do you want to go? Do you want to have a go? I'll show you how to play." I was like, "Do you know what? After all this time at this tournament, I never actually thought about laying my hands on a foosball table. I haven't played for 10 years." And I said, "All right, this could be fun." The bloke, his name is Fast Eddie. Right, I'm here with Team GB's Fast Eddie. And he is going to teach me how to play elite level foosball. I haven't touched a foosball table in about 10 to 15 years, but it looks pretty easy. So, come on then, Eddie, try and beat me.
Oh, that was hard luck.
I almost saved it. So it's my go, right?
Your go here, Adam, from the middle. So that goes there. Touch two players and do what you like. That's it.
Oh, okay. I'm more of a defender anyway, to be honest. Oh, goodness me. It's 2-0 to Fast Eddie. Christ. Well, Fast Eddie is officially fast.
Is that 2-0, Adam?
I think that's 3, actually.
The most frustrating game in the world. Jesus Christ.
5-1.
Here we go.
Fingertips to that one. It's 9-1 to Fast Eddie. I think that's 10-1. Possibly 11.
So we were playing along. He was teaching me the basics, and then some random French guys came over and said, "Do you want a game?" So then suddenly, I was playing against some French locals on, I think it was on their home table, the Bonzini, with only Fast Eddie to help me, and we decided that he should go in goal. No, we decided that he should go up front because he was the only hope we had, and I did my best to block it, and we won. I'm pretty sure we won. So there we go. I've won a game at the Foosball World Cup. Right, there we are. An unorthodox end to a Football Clichés podcast, but one I'm delighted to have. Thanks to you, James, for joining the adjudication panel.
Pleasure as always.
Dave, I hope you learned a lot about foosball today.
I did. All I ask is that you take me on the next trip, please.
You'll be there. Yeah, trust me. I'll convert you. This is like a cult as far as I'm concerned.
We could enter.
Yeah. Do you fancy yourself as a goalkeeper or a striker?
I'm really shit at both. On foosball. Mm. I'm probably worse than you at foosball. It is the single thing that I am worst at, not just in sport, in anything. I'm appalling, but
I annoying.
Would rather be the striker, I think.
Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Go for the glory. That's no problem. No problem. You're allowed to switch in between the games, so don't worry. And we'll be back on Thursday for another episode of Football Clichés. Thanks for everyone for listening. See you soon.
The Athletic.